Talk Show.
Recorded live.
This is Carl Schinnemann, Director of Legal Analytics and Review at Jurnov, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when they're interested in listening to it or downloading it to your iPod or whenever you have time to click play. Today we have an excellent show as we talk about the intersection of local e-discovery with national thought leaders called Friends of eDiscovery. Everyone who's been involved in eDiscovery knows about the Sedona Conference and EDRM and their role in shaping best practices for electronic discovery. And many of us in the field have met other practitioners as we try to educate ourselves collectively in national conferences such as Georgetown eDiscovery Conference, Legal Tech, and the ABA Tech Show. But what happens after the show and we go home to wherever home is? Maybe it's Cincinnati, maybe it's Columbus, Indianapolis, San Jose, Plymouth, Maine, Kansas City. I mean, where are the thought leaders? I suppose, this forum, ESI Bytes, is a place you can look to for information. It's free, and you could call or contact me. I try to help you, but really, I'm a stranger to you. And finding strangers on the internet, there's always a risk with that. So what happens at home? And that's where the rubber hits the road. And, where it can prove most useful to have friends you can call on and bounce ideas off of, almost like that James Taylor song, You Have a Friend. And this is one of the goals of Friends of eDiscovery and other networking groups like it, such as BeDiscovery in Washington, D.C. Our panelists today to talk about this are Doug Matthews from Vori Sater, Seymour & Peace, who's set up a Friends of eDiscovery group in Columbus, Ohio, and Pete Pepitone, who's founded Friends of eDiscovery. And I should add, I have a Friends of eDiscovery group in Pittsburgh that I've been running now for three or four meetings, and it's going well. So, Doug Matthews, his background, he's a partner at the law firm of Vori Sater, Seymour and Peace, in their Columbus office, and a member of the litigation group. His practice focuses on employment litigation and counseling and electronic discovery matters. He's represented both corporate and public entities in a variety of employment-related litigation, including multiple putative class actions. He's also advised a broad range of clients on employment-related matters and on the management and discovery of electronically stored information. Doug's a member of the American Bar Association, Federal Bar Association, and Columbus Bar Association. In addition, he's a member of the Defense Research Institute and serves on its Electronic Discovery and Employment Law Committees. Doug, glad to have you on the show here. And Pete Pepitone is Associate General Counsel at Mimecast North America Incorporated, advising the company on a wide array of legal matters. He also plays a role in the business operations of the company by assisting the company in crafting the marketing message for its information governance and e-discovery offerings and helping to describe the functionality the products need to have. Pete's an industry expert in information governance and e-discovery. He's spent the past 17 years developing software and delivering professional services to the Fortune 2000. He spent much of that time helping to re-engineer the way lawyers use technology to achieve greater efficiency and better results in litigation, both as an attorney and at several technology companies. Pete's a longtime member of the Sedona Conference, which is, as we all know, a think tank dedicated to education and dialogue surrounding e-discovery and information governance issues, and is a member of several drafting teams. He's also a member of the Electronic Discovery Reference Model, a project aimed at generating guidance through the maze of managing an electronic discovery project. He's a frequent speaker and author on information governance and specifically its beneficial effects on eDiscovery. And as we mentioned, Pete started Friends of eDiscovery. So now let's get started. First of all, I always like to ask first-time panelists on ESI Bytes, how did you get started in eDiscovery? And Doug, why don't we start with you, and then Pete, you can throw in your starting point.
I think I kind of fell into it in representing an automobile manufacturer in a couple of employment class actions. I was given the assignment of dealing with the discovery and included all the e-discovery, including email and a lot of data from databases. And through the course of that, I ended up developing a fair amount of knowledge. And then when our firm really decided a few years ago that we were going to set up a group to handle e-discovery, or at least become the leaders and available for consultation with our other attorneys on e-discovery matters. I was part of that. Now I'm actually heading that up for our firm.
Great. And Pete?
So as a young lawyer in my native Louisiana, I was seconded to the plaintiff steering committee in the breast implant litigation. We went through, there was general discovery, but a lot of it was the e-discovery of the email and electronic documents that the various defendants had produced in that litigation.
Well, I never knew you came from the plaintiff side originally, Pete. You've evolved over the years.
Well, both plaintiff and defense side early on when I was full-time practicing.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Friends of eDiscovery. Pete, what's the idea behind Friends of eDiscovery?
So there were a couple of ideas. One was that there's conferences all over the place where people will stand up on a podium and talk at you. But what I kept hearing from my corporate clients when I was at another company was that what they really wanted was they wanted to talk to people that sat in their chair at other organizations and find out what they were doing to be able to find out what, is what I'm doing the right thing? Am I doing way too much? Am I doing enough? Sort of to make sure that they were in the middle of the pack, keeping up with the Joneses, as you will. And the other notion was a sense that it seems if you look out at the general landscape of who participates in large e-discovery talking or thought leadership, it seems that all of e-discovery is practiced in New York, D.C., Chicago, Houston, L.A., and San Francisco, and that's just not the case. So there's a localized sense of, hey, we do discovery here too. New York, Chicago, D.C., et cetera, those are where the big law firms are headquartered. But companies, the end clients, the end litigants in litigation are all over the country, all over the world. So there was this dual sense of people wanted to talk to people like them, and they didn't really want to always have to travel to do it, or they wanted a more localized sense of what was going on in the space.
Great. And how many cities now have chapters set up?
So there's sort of a sliding scale of the formality that people have. Actual Friends of eDiscovery, the meetings are titled that, et cetera. We've got Cincinnati, where things were sort of formed. You guys in Pittsburgh and the Columbus group. So far, no one else is calling theirs Friends of eDiscovery. Though we've got the exact same sort of thing going on here in D.C. We've done it in San Francisco, San Antonio, Birmingham, and Atlanta. So again, not necessarily the big towns that you always think of.
Yeah.
And we've currently got starting up Boston. There's interest in Kansas City. From one of the recent conferences, someone got sent over to me from Nashville saying they wanted to start one there. So there's a lot of interest in this communal sort of discussion.
It doesn't have to be under the same name. It's going to be like biker groups. You discovered biker groups.
We just had Rolling Thunder here for in D.C. for Memorial Day. Maybe we should have asked all the bikers that came to remember prisoners of war in past conflicts. Maybe we should have asked them to go to their local towns
and,
on their Harleys and spread the message.
And yeah, you know what? Actually, we'll get to spreading the message because I think there's some unique opportunities with this. But I got to say, I went to a meeting in Cincinnati. I had Tom Allman and Judge Grimm on a podcast, and Tom Allman works with you on the Cincinnati group. And Tom said I should come check this out, and I went and immediately knew what we were going to start this in Pittsburgh. It was one of the most exciting meetings I've sat in because the sophistication, the issues that were being thrown out were every bit as comprehensive as you find at national groups. And honestly, these were almost all, with the exception of maybe three or four people that I'd never knew of or heard of really before. But it was really interesting to see it at that level and the sophistication and the grappling with issues. It was exciting.
Yeah. So first off, Tom deserves a large shout out because anything that you're going to do in eDiscovery becomes better if you involve Tom. And you know, Tom's the most frequent and the most voluminous commentator in the space, and has done it for a long time and has advised for a long time, et cetera. So it always becomes better with Tom involved. And a second shout out. The phrase Friends of eDiscovery is actually Tom's creation. So he deserves credit for that part.
Great. Well, Doug, having set this up in Columbus, how do you think this fits in with other think tanks like Sedona and EDRM? Does it compete with these think tanks?
I don't think of it as competition, as more of a local supplement. Sedona and EDRM provide amazing amounts of really high-quality information and thoughts. But to be involved in them, it's obviously a large group of people, sort of a limited role in it. You really are picking up people from all around the country. It's more expensive to be involved and a lot of, traveling involved. Where I think the Friends of eDiscovery is really set up to be a local community where people can easily participate and volunteer. And that's been, we've only had one meeting in Columbus, but the amount of interest and feedback we got after the meeting was extremely high because it's simple. It's in town. People just come in for a meeting. We didn't charge anything. And we really got a good discussion going from both, the business side and the law firm side. So I think it works as a nice supplement to those more national groups.
Yeah, and you know what? What I saw when we set up in Pittsburgh is, and from sort of really trying to replicate the excitement in Cincinnati, is you get a couple of thought leaders involved from some of these groups, and you leverage off of their backgrounds. In Pittsburgh, we've got a number of people that are involved with things like that. Like Dave Cohen at K&L Gates, or Tim Opsitnik came in from Cleveland. He's one of the original Sedona people. Pete came in for the first meeting. Myself with ESI Bytes. And then you bring in a judge, is what seemed to work for us, a judge that really is interested in electronic discovery. And we were very fortunate to have Judge Conte from the Western District come in, and she has become almost like a co-chair in our local group. I always check when she's available before I schedule a meeting. And what really worked for us was the first two meetings were very exciting, but they weren't big. The third meeting we held at the federal court building, and four judges showed up. And we had over 30 people, and it was a phenomenal meeting, a phenomenal meeting. We got 17 people ask questions in a roundtable discussion. It was unbelievable. And at the end, everyone clapped. So we're off and running. And, that's sort of, my not a short answer, but my, throwing out how to sort of evolve this thing. But Pete, do you see any, you've talked about some of the benefits, but do you see any tangible benefits from these meetings other than comfort?
So absolutely. The last meeting we had, let's say in Cincinnati, there was a discussion of a couple of recent cases that came out. People may have heard, I say in some jest, because everybody's heard, of Pension Committee and Remkes. And the notion of, what exactly are folks doing about legal hold? Are you following these extensive steps in every single case? And one of the law firm lawyers got up and said, well, here's the policy that we have, and it's very extensive, and it's very thought out, and it's extremely defensible. And the corporate participants got up to a company and said, we don't do that in every case. We can't do that in every case. We would shut the business down. And so there was great comfort that the corporate community was able to take, and this is, again, part of the main reason the group was formed and continues to thrive. That they got to find out that what they were doing was what the others were all doing. So they now have an ability to understand and perhaps even describe in a courtroom if necessary that they're smack dab in the middle of what the requirements are for legal hold as practiced in the community. A second, and I don't think any less tangible benefit, is the fact that this community is now formed. Since the formation of the group, and I'll go back to Cincinnati, we have law school classes being taught in eDiscovery. That a couple of the guys got together and said, hey, how about if we do this? And went to, I think, UC and said, how about if we teach this class? And they have roped in most of the other participants in the group as guest lecturers from time to time. So those are a couple of the, I think the top benefits is that formation of really a good sense of what the local standards are, and that community that people can talk to, they can call from time to time. And it's very interesting to go back to, and we've now settled on a quarterly basis for the meetings, and people will have a bit of a social part at the beginning, because we've all gotten to know each other. You know, how's your family member doing? How did this go? We've had births, we've had marriages since then. So you really begin to follow the lives of other people as you're more engaged with them, and that's, you know, I think that happens in basically any community that you're able to form.
Yeah, you know, I've talked a little bit about this on a podcast on the legal hold issue, but you know, when you have people that know each other from within the community, you can dive into something that might be a little sensitive with strangers. And because, you know, you're neighbors, you live in the same communities, you see each other, you work together more frequently. And I asked a question that just occurred to me on the spur of the moment, you know, for the in-house people, how many of you, because we're doing a legal hold type of a presentation as well, how many of you feel like when the outside counsel comes to you and says, we got to do this, we got to do this, we got to, you know, lock everything down, that they're trying to make more money? Everyone raised their hand. We had 12, 13 in-house people raise their hand. And then I said, how many of you outside counsel, when you go in and want information and you need to get it for your case, feel like you're not getting full cooperation? They all raised their hand, 12, 13. It's unanimous. So that's a major issue that's critical to effective e-discovery on the same side of the team. And, you know, you can explore those types of issues at a community level, I think, a little more easily.
That's interesting. I've been to some of the national, you know, CLEs, discussion conferences, and at first I was very taken aback at the almost hostility and great suspicion that the in-house people viewed their outside counsel on e-discovery, that there really was a strong belief that outside counsel was, their strategy was based on maximizing law firm profits rather than doing what was best for the client, which was a real surprise to me. And I'd like, that's something we didn't talk about at our meeting, and I think that would be interesting to find out whether that sort of same impression lies with the in-house counsel here in Columbus.
You know what? I'll do a podcast on outside in-house counsel hostility. Okay. So anyway, let's talk about setting up a chapter. Doug, you did this in Columbus. What did you do, and how did the meeting go? I mean, what was your approach?
What we did, you know, first we had to figure out how to get people in the door, and we did a few things. We reached out to the judiciary first, I think, and asked we have a local trial court, two judges that are designated to be the business court. I'm trying to remember the formal name of it in our local state court here. And we reached out to them, and one of those judges has expressed interest. He didn't come to the first meeting, but he planned on coming to the other ones. And we reached out to one of the magistrate judges here in the Southern District of Ohio in Columbus, and she came as well. She agreed to come, so we brought her along. Then we also reached out to the other, when we contacted that magistrate judge, she insisted there be at least some plaintiff's representation there, not just defendants, which I think has been different than some of the other friends of eDiscovery. So we then looked at, all right, who from the law firms are we going to invite? And we identified some plaintiff's firms, and then we circulated all the other larger firms in Columbus and some medium-sized firms in Columbus, and where we knew who the person was responsible for electronic discovery, we reached out to them directly. Where we didn't, we sort of found the head of their litigation section and sent on an invitation that we were going to put this sort of group together. We also sat down, frankly, with sort of the list of the largest companies in Central Ohio, and for those of them who are our clients, we sent out invitations to a lot of them. And we also identified other ones where they weren't necessarily our clients exclusively, but we knew contacts through either other e-discovery efforts and invited them. And we ended up with an extremely big turnout. We had, I think, 30, 34, 35 people for our first meeting, which was pushing the limits of the conference room, frankly, that we had to do this. But, you know, it took a little bit of work to get going, but it really a lot of cooperation and a lot of enthusiasm from the other people we invited. We had a lot, so we had a good mix of judiciary, outside counsel, both plaintiff and defendant, and corporations. I think there's a little hesitancy for the other law firms. We invited them to bring along clients, and I don't think we actually got that far in the cooperation yet, but I think I'm hoping that that will change. And I sort of understand that suspicion that it might initially be viewed with, but I think it ended up going really well. In fact, the magistrate judge admitted afterward that she got the invitation and said she'd come as much as a matter of professional courtesy, which is sort of dreading it. But she so thoroughly enjoyed it, she said, "I'm absolutely going to come to all these. This has been really rewarding," in part because we've learned that in Columbus that disputes really haven't percolated to the judiciary at all. And so it was really in some ways, working with a clean slate. They've been to CLE and learned to some extent, but it really was sort of an ability to educate at least the local magistrate judges on what's really involved here and the types of burdens that e-discovery can involve.
Yeah, it really is a good community education opportunity. And when we had the one at the courthouse a month ago, the judges were basically saying that we're now seeing the cases. They're coming. We're involved in them. We're very interested. Our path, and then I want to get your take on it, Pete, because there's no one way to do this. There's no one name. There's no one path. We started first with corporations, and we had about 12 people at the first one, and we had a couple of really strong thought leaders who dominated, and we had a couple of people really very curious, and then we had some judges and clerks. And at the end of the roundtable sort of discussion, we had enough people that we could do a roundtable. We asked, should we do this again? And it was unanimous, yes. The second time, the club messed me up. I'm on the board there. But they they set up the room in a way where we didn't have a single table. And we invited outside counsel to this one. And we decided we wanted to have outside counsel. And we had about 14, 15 people. And I split people up into groups of three or four per table and forced them to talk for 10 or 15 minutes about what issues they thought were real important and then meet. And that way, everyone had to participate some. And so you had the initial discussions, and then you shared your findings with the rest of the group, one spokesperson. And at the end of that, everyone said, this is the way to do it. This was fantastic. We're definitely doing this again. Everyone participated. So we had the third one at the courthouse, and then we had too many people to do what we had done before. Because, again, we were overwhelmed with over 30 people. So Judge Conte and I sort of presented something on legal holds and the pension case and then got dialogue going. And the amazing thing is with that many people, we had 17 or so people raise their hand and want to participate. So it was still a very open dialogue. And again, standing ovation, let's do this again. So a local law firm has said they'll host the next one at the end of July. And we're doing them every 2 to 3 months right now. So there's no one way to do it.
That's what we try to do is get it in a big circle format so that it really was a discussion among everyone. And like you, we had great participation among what turned out to be a fairly large group.
Mm-hmm. Pete, do you have any suggestions on good topics for meetings or any tips you might have for starting similar chapters in another city?
Well, so the way to start the chapter is you've got to figure out what to anchor on, and I think you guys both did it. Find a judge or two, and the anchor is going to be more the corporate community than the outside law firm community. If you've got a judge and you've got the big companies in your town there, everybody else is going to come. You will solve attendance that way, and I've never found it to be the case where you build it and they will come. We've had to work the phones, and everybody goes out with the assignment of, all right, so this is who we are in this particular town. Who are we missing? Let's get everybody here so that everybody's represented. On the topic side, I don't think there's a real shortage. We always seem to come back to sort of two buckets worth of topics. One is on more the proactive side. What are people doing for ESI management? What are people doing for email management? Are people using technology? Are people using retention periods? Are people trying to get a handle overall on their on their capabilities or their response efforts or their information ahead of time? And then when we are talking technology, specifically, what are people using? How are they using it? How did they justify the use or the acquisition of that technology? Who did they have to go to in their company to do that? How are they using it? That sort of thing. And then another bucket of topics is more the reactive legal issues. So, you know, how are we going to implement this hold? How extensive are we going to be in the application of the hold? Does it have to be written all the time? Are we going to phase our preservation approach? Do some right away and then through investigation add more people, that sort of thing. There's not really a shortage of topics, and one of the things that we do every so many meetings in most of the places is ask people, okay, let's go around the room, and, you know, we've got new folks here today. Go around, say who you are, and what do you want to learn? And if you've got 25 people, you won't get 25 separate topics probably. Maybe you'll get 15, but then you've got enough for your program committee to take and say, now we're gonna you know, these three are sort of similar, so next month's meeting is going to be about this thing here.
That's a good idea to have sort of a suggestion list handed to everyone to say something that they're really interested in for the next meeting. Good. That's a good idea. Doug, how hard was this for you to start this up? I mean, are there any dues or requirements, or is it all like grassroots hitting the phones?
This was pretty much grassroots hit the phones. We, you know, like I said, sort of took a list of the largest companies and where we knew contacts, we went ahead and contacted them. Where, you know, and usually I would work through other lawyers in my firm and say, hey, look, here's, we're putting this together. And, you know, some were more cooperative than others, but we ended up with a really good list of large to medium sized companies, and the interest was very high. And I'm hoping that we can get other firms to start bringing some of their larger clients as well. But we tried to make it as accessible as possible. There was no dues, no, you know, it was just particularly common. I think we're hoping to have maybe the law firms in town sort of host the next one. We had another large firm here in Columbus agreed to host the second meeting, and I think we've already got another firm had picked up the third one after that. So it took a little bit of effort from a few people at our firm and working the phones, but the interest was so high, we really didn't have to, you know, try to corral people too difficult. And I think the trick now is to, how do you get it to spread the word to other people that didn't come to the first meeting without also then I worry about getting too big. But we'll see with the second meeting whether there's drop off from after the first one.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, my experience has been that you never get everyone from the previous meeting showing up at the second meeting, and it's because we're all busy.
Sure.
And but the neat thing about eDiscovery, and I always say this at our meetings, we're not going to solve eDiscovery today. So it's not like someone missed, by missing a meeting, you know, the secret. It's more about, well, you know, what's bothering you right now as we evolve. So it's really and you know, the shortage of people who are really very versed in this area means that those people are, by definition, will be busy. So and then the size of our community sort of, you know, caps out. I'm up to, I've got about 170 people now on my list that we invite, you know, maybe there's 200 total in the city. I'm missing a few. And Pete, what about confidentiality of what's discussed at the meeting? I mean, Doug mentioned having the plaintiff bar there. You know, that raises some issues. What's your take on, you know, getting, trusting what you're saying isn't going to show up in court, you know, How's that handled?
Well, first off, we always start off with, you know, what happens here stays here, Vegas rules kind of thing, right? You know, nobody's to be quoted later, et cetera. And everybody, you know, nods assent to that. We haven't yet started the blood oath procedure anywhere. you know, there's that general sort of thing.
Bikers have a justice protocol, and we could learn a lot from bikers.
Well, you know, we keep going back to that. We may have to give that some more thought. It is interesting. In the Columbus meeting, we did experience less opening of the kimono, if you will. And I even had a couple of comments after from people that had been to meetings in other places that, you know, there was just going to be less when it loses the corporate or the defense side clubbiness, then you lose some of the openness that would otherwise occur. You gain a new viewpoint, and specifically in the Columbus instance, the judge was insistent on plaintiffs being there. So it's a trade-off. You know, you're going to get, if you have both sides, you're going to get less openness specifically on what are you doing ahead of time, how did you set this up, stuff that really is very open sharing, but you gain the new perspective. So the verbal assent of, you know, nobody's going to use this anywhere is all well and good, but if you're talking about how your system is set up and specifically what your challenges might be, you know, you'd be hard pressed to expect someone that you might be opposite at some point to not remember that had been said. And it's funny, even some of our corporate participants have said, I'm okay discussing this very openly in this setting because ABC company or XYZ company that's in my industry and that sometimes we're, you know, opposed to in commercial litigation or patent litigation or something like that, they're not here. You know, if we were in Atlanta and we had Coke, they might be very open. But if Pepsi were at the meeting, they probably wouldn't be so open.
Yeah, luckily in communities often of the size we're talking about, you know, you don't, you know, it's a one horse town of each major industry group, so it's not as you know, you don't run into that risk as much as you'd run in D.C. or New York or any of the major markets.
Right.
I also tended to think of it as sort of a, in some ways, it's consistent with the philosophy of transparency and cooperation that is so much a part of the e-discovery, you know, lessons from that we hear from the commentators and the bench, what they like, in some ways. And I'm sure there was some reluctance to speak with the plaintiff's bar there. And on the other hand, I think there's a real benefit in terms of educating, at least making them aware of what the actual burdens and costs are, and certainly in educating the judiciary on that, turned out to be, I thought, a positive. It was interesting, we had a particularly cooperative plaintiff's counsel there who actually talked about not thinking that backup, he agreed that backup tapes were not something that should be have to be produced.
Yeah, that'll
restored.
Be a real test of the what's said here to state here, right? If,
yeah.
If when all the corporate defendants in town have to go against if that plaintiff or any other plaintiff firm, saying, "Wait a minute, you said back then that, you know, backup tapes were out of bounds or we're NRA," so we'll get a real test on whether that can survive.
Doug, we haven't had the plaintiff bar at any of our meetings in Pittsburgh. We've had a different mix, and I'd like to have the way I'm going to attack this in Pittsburgh is we're going to have one special meeting. We may do this periodically where we'll have the plaintiff bar. We may have one special meeting where we have different vendors. I mean, a lot of it's up to the people involved in the group. How did you access the plaintiff bar? You know, we all know where they're at when you get sued, but you know, who are the e-discovery most likely plaintiff lawyers that you know, do you have any advice?
And I don't think we didn't come at it from who would be the most knowledgeable on electronic discovery. It was sort of, all right, there are some firms we have in town that do sort of a mixture of plaintiffs and defense work. We sort of started there. There was one other plaintiff's lawyer that I think is thought of as one of the better plaintiff's lawyers here, and not as difficult as as some of the others are to deal with. Now, and we sent our standard invitation. Our standard invitation also had a line in there. I think it was mainly trying to designed to try to get other law firms to bring their clients. That said, and if there's any other people, you know, either your clients who would be interested or other firms, then let them know. Well, you know, one of the plaintiff's lawyers we sent it out to then recruited two or three other folks to come to the meeting.
Yeah, it really is about cooperation at this meeting. So, I mean, we had, you know, one of the byproducts was Pete and I both recruited Judge Conte to sign the cooperation proclamation, and she did. She's the 100th judge in the country to sign it. So, Richard Brayman and Judge Conte and I are going to do a podcast on that later in June.
Well, I'd be very curious as to, since, you know, that's been the only, I've been to one of the Cincinnati meetings where there were no plaintiffs counsel there, and I've been to the Columbus one, and having, I guess, only a small point of reference, I didn't see a vast difference in the openness, but I have heard afterward that at least there was some. But I'd be very interested in finding out if your groups decide to have one where you invite plaintiff's counsel, whether you really sense a difference in the openness and efficacy of the meeting.
I'm looking forward to doing that. And Doug, you know, I mentioned earlier in the Pittsburgh meeting, did you have a situation with your first meeting where you had a few experts that dominated the meeting and others were just looking to take notes and learn? And how did you deal with that? Maybe Pete, maybe you could chime in on how you deal with that, because that's what we saw in the beginning here.
I guess my impression looking back was that I thought we had I'm sure there were some people that spoke more frequently than others, but I thought we had a pretty good cross-section. I guess among the plaintiffs bar, there was one who spoke and one person who sat quietly and dutifully took notes the whole time. But I thought with the corporate people, I thought most of them chimed up and spoke about something, and we tried to, you know, do our best to elicit comments from everyone. But Pete, I guess I'd see if your perception was the same as mine.
I think that's about right, and as it turns out, you know, like a lot of other things, it's sort of an issue of managing the meeting. I mean, if you see that more people are saying things, then, you know, let's try to drag in other commentary. You know, who hasn't had a chance to speak yet? I don't think you're gonna have too many meetings that aren't extremely rigid in their format, where you won't find a leaning. You know, a few people are gonna say more things than a couple of the other people. In the Columbus meeting, there were some people that showed up specifically just to sit there and learn. And you know what? That was fine. I remember there were a couple of young people from the Ohio Attorney General's office that, you know, that was, they were told to go and sit and learn. Okay, great. They didn't have so much that they felt they wanted to say, but they took it in.
Doug, do you believe it's worth coordinating between different cities to share ideas and what we're learning at these events generally, and also attending, you know, other chapter meetings occasionally?
I think it's an interesting question. I think it was certainly interesting for me to attend the Cincinnati one, and I would like to be able to attend another one to get some cross-pollination of ideas. And like I said, I'd be really interested in knowing if you were to have another meeting with plaintiff's counsel, whether or not you found like there was a real difference in the type of discussion. I'm sort of scratching my head right now trying to think of the best way that you could coordinate between the different cities other than occasionally coming to a different meeting.
Well, I can throw out an idea right now. It's what we're doing. I had a podcast with 11 people, 8 law students, myself, and Judge Grimm, and I was able to get people to get IDs so that you can chat on the computer, which is part of the functionality of the podcasting. I don't typically use it, but there is a way where you can have a chat dialogue online, throw questions out, and I can also moderate by seeing by city who's up. I mean, there's a way to do this, and I think it would be a real interesting show to have almost like a UN type of a thing where you have a representative from each city that's doing this and get sort of a sense of what's happening around the country. I mean, I think that's an excellent. I'd love to hear what's happening around the country and some of the other markets to get a sense of how this field's developing.
So that's part of the overall plan, right? Is to start off with a few different cities and different places, and then have sort of an umbrella group that there's some sort of national communaling going on. Be that a physical gathering, be that a gathering exactly like what you're talking about, Carl. You know, some sort of online presence. As it turns out, a lot of the big companies might have video conferencing capabilities. So that's been thrown out there. Is how about if, you know, on a given day, everybody goes to, you know, this big company in this town or that one in that town, and they've got this, or Doug, you know, your firm might have that sort of capability. And then video conference amongst the different chapters. So there's a lot of desire to have that sharing that's happening on a communal basis. Okay, so how do we really match up everywhere else? And it's just going to be a matter of logistically what makes the most sense.
Yeah. And I think it would be very helpful in that I think is when you go to the Sedona conference or, you know, the national meetings, I still get the sense they're dominated by the major cities and the major markets who have the mega clients and are dealing with very sophisticated opposing counsel, a lot of, you know, business-to-business litigation. And sometimes their solutions tend to be a lot different than when you're dealing with even a large company in the smaller city, and particularly with the smaller to medium-sized companies who still have to deal with these issues, that those type, especially the smaller and medium-sized companies, don't really get addressed at some of these national conferences as much. And there may be a different standard that develops in a local community compared to what's being talked about at these national meetings. And it would be good, it would be interesting to know whether or not that's been a similar experience with other communities. I think it would be very helpful to do.
No, I agree that there are differences. I mean, that's one of the things I'd always pitch to people as an ex-New Yorker who now who's lived in Pittsburgh now half my life. It's hard to believe. still feel like a New Yorker inside, but you know, the amazing thing about a community, and now I'm going to sound like John Cougar Mellencamp, you know, it's people do get together and they do, there's a sense of trust. We have a conference every year, the Bench Bar Conference, where litigators, plaintiffs, judges get together, and it's like 800 lawyers go up to a resort, and it's been happening for 45 years. And people know each other. They're civil in court. I mean, there's been an informal cooperation proclamation that's occurred in this bar for years. And I think it's the size of the community really offers a difference than you get in a larger community where it's war. You know, it's a big part of the country. If you were to add up all similar size cities like a Pittsburgh, like a Cleveland, like a Columbus, you know, Kansas City, you would find more of the Fortune 500 and more of the larger firms are based in those communities collectively. It's like the AT&T commercial where they string together all the cities. Than you would find in a Chicago or New York. It's an interesting issue. But I do want to add, I think Sedona and EDRM are phenomenal organizations and wonderful think tanks. And it's a great necessary to have some of the people that do this more often to be meeting and talking about these problems. And, you know, so you know, that they are always on our show, you know, different people, and I respect, you know, the people that commit their time and try to solve these problems as a group.
I agree completely.
So, well, Pete, how do I wanted to throw out one other idea here about visiting other meetings. You know, when we started Pittsburgh, Tim Opsitnik helped me get started here because he's one of the original Sedona people, and he works with me, at Juranov. And after the first meeting, we decided he's in Cleveland. He's not, you know, he shouldn't come to the Pittsburgh meetings, and he hasn't since. Do you lose something if you start having people from other markets coming in from the neighbor type of a, you know, everything here, we're all, who's that guy, you know, type of a thing, you know? Or is it sort of diluted if it's only one or two people? And Pete, you've done this more than anyone else. What's your take on that?
I think it's more an issue of getting known. The first meeting or two in any town, you're going to have less less openness, less sharing, et cetera. So if there's constantly new people, then there's going to be a questioning in the minds of people that you want to do the sharing. Am I okay here? Can I trust this, et cetera? You know, some random person off the street might not be so good. If you've got, well, today, you know, Doug's going to visit in, you know, Doug's from Columbus and is actively involved in Friends of eDiscovery there, started that group, or Carl's here from Pittsburgh, and Carl started the group there. My sense is that there's not a drop-off in openness or sharing, and there hasn't been when I've been around, because they're really in most of these towns it wouldn't exist except for following the lead that we've been able to establish in other places. So personally, I don't see that as an issue, but I could be biased in that direction.
Pete, how do interested people contact you about other cities or starting this up? I know there's no real formal website or anything like that. At least I'm not aware of it. If you want, I'll post your contact information on the description of the show. I think it's important to have some nexus between all the groups so that we can talk about what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. So people can reach me, and you're more than welcome to put my contact information up. It is P. Pepitin. The last name is P-E-P-I-T as in Tom, O-N as in Nancy. So put another P in the front of that at mimecast.com. M-I-M-E-C-A-S-T. Mime for the email protocol, the Mime protocol, cast. Or people can call me, 703-682-6897, and I'm more than happy to talk about and assist with what's happened, what's working, what's not working so much. And as Doug can tell you, sometimes just, you know, remind folks, hey, you know, there's got to be a big campaign to get people, because it's all about critical mass. And once you have the critical mass, the thing will begin to take on a life of its own.
Okay, great. Well, I want to thank both Doug and Pete for joining us on this show. You know, it's always great to have people with different perspectives on ESI Bytes, and hopefully we'll be able to do more shows like I discussed following this this educational tool or educational communities. To the listeners, if you have enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com with a Y for a complete list of our show. You can also remember the show and website phonetically if you sound it out. It's Easy Bytes of Information, Easy Bytes of ESI Information. So however you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes to learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Schinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review from Jurnov, wishing you a nice day.